Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 137. A lot of apologies coming at you at the top of this show. The first being, I did have to cancel our shows in DC and Northampton on November 6th and November 8th. I am beyond sorry about that. I truly am. It's never my first choice to have to cancel a show. It was work related. There were contractual issues. There's nothing I can do about it. We are rescheduling those dates, and we will have those rescheduled dates for you soon. You should be able to use the tickets that you already got for the new date. Hopefully you can make it. But if you're mad at me, I understand, but just know that I am pissed at myself that it happened, even though there was nothing I could do about it. I am taking on your anger at myself. I apologize. I really, really, really do. But we'll do our best to make it right, and then I'll give you more details in the next episode of the Nerdist Podcast on that hostful episode dropping this week, and we'll talk about a little bit there. And now that I've apologized for doing something terrible, my book is coming out tomorrow, or today, or yesterday, or months ago, whenever you listen to this. Ultimately, it's November 1st, 2011 is when it comes out. So it's available, should be available in stores, it's available on any of your fine purveyors of digital book technology. Also should be able to get it on Kindle and Nook, and there is an audiobook version in iTunes as well. So it's called The Nerdist Way. You probably heard me blab about it before. It is now available, so check that out. I would like to thank, as a returning sponsor to the Nerdist Podcast, GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting now with HD Faces by Citrix. So you can collaborate with anyone around the world face-to-face in high definition. Online meetings become a snap because you can see with crystal clarity what some jerk on the other end is trying to sell you with his lies, with his mendacities, because his eyes are that clear to you. It's available for Mac or PC. Totally easy to use. You just need an internet connection and a webcam, and you got yourself an online meeting. Use it for whatever you want. You get a 30-day free trial if you go to GoToMeeting. Hold all the meetings you want for one low flat rate. Phone and voice over IP conferencing are included for free. So visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist. And now the last apology of this disclaimer parade. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was recorded with one of my favorite people, Veronica Belmont. Amazing, amazing young woman. Brilliant, nerdy, fighting the good fight. And we recorded as part of SF Sketchfest does summer nights. Usually the festival is in January, but they do some shows throughout the year. So we recorded this at the California Academy of Sciences in August, and I've held on to it for a long time because the audio is messed up, which you will hear when you listen to it. So there's no need to email me and say, hey, the audio's not awesome. I know it's not. But Veronica's great, and I didn't want to let this episode not air. I tried to fix it. I gave it to Veronica to try to fix as well, and it just is what it is. We used the docent mics at the California Academy of Sciences. The live show was really cool. There were about 200 people, and we were in a hall with a bunch of it was a mixture of like live animals and then taxidermied animals as well. It was an incredible night, and so I'm just going to put it out anyway. Veronica's going to be conducting a Q&A with me at the Apple Store on Stockton in San Francisco for the book release on November 1st. And again, like I said, she's super awesome. And so here it is. Hopefully the content will allow you to see past the fact that the P's pop all the time in the mics and that it all just sounds really high-endy. But I got so like nerdy about and OCD about, it's not perfect, that I held on to it for a long time. But you know what? I want to put it out now because Veronica is just that awesome. So here it is, the Nerdist Podcast number 137 with Veronica Belmont.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello. Where's our little recorder? Oh, is it on? Oh, it's recording. Is it? Oh, no, it's not recording yet. Oh, yes, it is recording. Oh, splendid job. I went over there and tried to micromanage already by trying to hit the recorder, and you've done a fantastic job. What is your name? Daniel. Please have a hand for Daniel. Welcome to my evil hall of stuffed things. These animals were once alive and had lives, and I murdered them and put them here behind glass merely for my amusement because I'm wealthy. Thank you for coming. This is really amazing that they're doing this at the... I've not been to the California Academy of Sciences. Have you guys been here before? You have. It's absolutely incredible. I went... not that anyone asked, but I like to talk about myself. I went to... when there was an interim museum in the city by the 101, I went there and saw this amazing exhibit on ants. Huh? Ants? But this is this kind of beats ants a little bit, being here in African Hall. I'm very excited about my guest tonight. She's someone that I've known for a couple years, and someone that I have talked to many times about, oh, we've got to get you on. There's always been a scheduling problem. Her boyfriend's actually been on the podcast before. We've never gotten her before, so I am super thrilled. If you know Revision 3, if you know TechZilla, or if you're just a fan of nerd things, then you will certainly know Veronica Belmont!
Wow!
Hello, Veronica Belmont.
I brought too much stuff with me.
I know, I brought my bag too.
Okay, I'll stick it back there. Because I know how you people are.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, you've been to the California Academy of Sciences before, right?
I have. I actually came on opening night for the very first time, and that was super cool.
Oh, you San Francisco nerds are so awesome. You get to go cool.
We got a lot of cool stuff, yeah. And then I think I came back once recently to just walk around and check it out and go up on the roof and see all the cool stuff up there. Oh, it's a beautiful facility, I think it's, and this is actually one of my favorite rooms in the whole place, too.
African Hall. And you walk right outside, and there's a bunch of rays and all sorts of fishy things. And I think what you're hearing bleeding in right now is the erasure exhibit. Where they've actually got Andy Bell on display.
Did they taxidermy them, too?
They taxidermied erasure, yeah.
So not much different?
Okay. It's pretty funny. There's a docent. What you're seeing now is what they called in the early 90s a rave. It's a bunch of, stuffed kids with Dr. Seuss hats.
That's funny, but it hits too close to home. Let's not go there.
Were you a big raver?
No. That's not on the internet, so it's not true.
No, of course not. Where did you grow up, Veronica?
Connecticut.
You did?
Yes.
Did I?
Yeah, Nutmegger.
Now, I feel like I might have heard, but the internet lies sometimes. Did your mom work for Coleco?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, she was all up in the ColecoVision, Cabbage Patch Kids when they came on. Yeah, I had a lot of toys around the house when I was a kid. I'm not humble bragging, but it was... Because both my parents worked in the toy industry. So I was like their little testing subject at home.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you influenced a generation of Cabbage Patch Kids?
Absolutely not, no. The Cabbage Patch Kids are actually still all wrapped up in their creepy little boxes in the basement of my mom's house.
Like a serial killer would have.
Yeah. A little bit like that. No, but they were fun. I mean, Xavier Roberts was a cool guy, although he did sign his signature on a lot of small child's butts, I guess.
You real
that?
Kids?
No,
the dolls. The Cabbage Patch dolls, yeah.
Like, that's kind of weird, if you think back on it.
Better than the vaginas, let's be honest.
Definitely better than their vaginas.
Can you say vagina in the California Academy of Science?
Well, I mean,
technically...
That just happened, so...
It is a scientific term. Right? The music out there, it's like I want to pound on the wall and be like, could you guys please keep it down?
When did you realize that you're like the old person in the neighborhood? No, I mean, like, I'm having that right now where I'm like, oh, crap, I'm that guy. I'm that guy who's like pounding on the walls and yelling at people in the backyard and being like, it's 11:30 on a Saturday, what are you doing?
I have this new character. Actually, it's not so new, but I call him Impatient Prick. And Impatient Prick has no tolerance for anyone. And he gets impatient with people just for... Like I flew from New York to San Francisco yesterday, and a woman sat across the aisle with two kids, and the minute she came on, I was just like, God damn it! Like, no. They hadn't even done anything yet, and I was already mad, because you can't set babies on vibrate, and you should.
I have so many airplane stories, it's kind of horrifying, but not as bad as that guy who peed on the 12-year-old recently. Did you hear about that? The U.S. ski guy?
Who dashed his chances.
Well, apparently that's a thing now, to pee on airplanes. I have not yet experienced that myself.
Didn't Gerard Depardieu do that as well?
Yes. So anyway.
There's footage online of Anderson Cooper losing
it. Oh, I posted that on Google Plus
today. Oh, you did?
Okay. Yeah.
Because he starts laughing at Gerard Depardieu, like as in duty, and he just fucking loses it.
He can't hold on after a while. I can totally understand, though. I got a lot of comments of people being like, this is supposed to be serious news. Like, I can't believe a serious broadcaster would, you know, belittle himself by going into poop and pee jokes.
Bitter internet messengers. I don't believe it.
That doesn't exist.
What?
No, but there's a thing in San Francisco, going back to the old people in neighborhoods thing, called a NIMBY. Have you guys heard this? Not in my backyard.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the new thing.
Who the fuck has a backyard in San Francisco?
Yeah, right?
What kind of millionaires do you hang around?
So NIMBYs are the new yuppies in San Francisco. Yeah.
So, but it's going back to the kid thing, though. Do you feel like... I feel like traveling has influenced me to... against having kids anytime
soon. Oh, I've turned into a horrible person
right?
traveling.
Right? Because you really... that's when you see kids at their worst. And I try to be sympathetic because of the parents. Like, obviously, it's hard for them, but it's like, look, you guys fucked each other, so I don't know. Like, it's your fault. But Mike Furman and I were on a plane once, and the couple across the way had three kids. Two of them were lap kids.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually get, what, one, two, three? You can actually get three kids with two adults in the same row of seats.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have two lap kids and then a kid in the seat as well.
Oh, just a sloppy Joe of awfulness.
That's just like a whole lot of madness right
there.
Well,
they had a toy train, and it was the only thing that would keep their one, what I determined later, awful child, quiet.
Awful child one and two.
Yeah, exactly. So the only way the kid would keep, it was either the kid would either scream or you would hear the same little train song over and over again. This,
I can recommend a very nice pair of sound isolating headphones if you would like them
from
Bose.
Oh, it just fucking cut right through
everything.
The Bose, yeah. Like, but if Bose were smart, they would be like kitty stoppers. Like, they would market them that way.
Like the specific frequency range that children squeal at.
Yes.
I don't think they're masking that in the phase cancellation.
And they need to. And again, if you have kids, I apologize that you have kids.
I don't apologize. I do not. Not on an airplane. I'm sorry. It's every woman and man for himself in that situation.
I know. I was flying back from Boston once, like six and a half hours back, and the woman next to me was probably in her 50s, and she had a kid. So it was either some weird science experiment, or it was a grandchild, or she was kidnapping him to take to it like the delinquent father who was on the lam. I had built this whole narrative around it, and... And the kid, the second we sat down, and I had the window seat, she was right here, the kid just, it's screeching. And I wanted to get off and change planes, but I couldn't.
Yeah, I can't do that.
And I just sat there the whole time, and the woman was like, he's just crying. I'm like, no. No, crying is like when you're watching the end of Bridget Jones, and you're like, that's so beautiful, you know. Like,
this I just got something in my eye.
These were primal screams.
Yeah. I had a kid, a little girl, she was probably about 5 or 6, and she just kicked the back of the seat the whole time, like that.
Does something happen with, do people here have kids? A couple people have kids? Does something... Where the fuck are you? Get out! No. Take your hell's bond from my sight. So, does a thing happen when you're a parent where you just get numb because... you just can't manage your child all the time? What happens?
You become hyper aware when you're around us.
Oh, really? You do?
Yeah. No, it's more like, oh, that kid.
Right.
So this woman with the kicking seat child, I actually... Well, yeah, because you're a decent human being. And I went to the bathroom, and I came back on my way back, and she was behind me, and so I knelt down next to the mother's seat, and I was like, I'm really sorry, but could you please ask your daughter to stop kicking the back of my seat? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me like she wanted to rip my eyeballs out.
Oh.
Like, how dare you right. talk to my child like that?
Yeah.
And so I sat down, and then the kid kept doing it. And so finally I had enough, and I turned around and looked between the gap at the child, mm-hmm. like directly in her little hateful eyes. And I was just like, you know, I can't really replicate it now because I'm not that angry.
Right.
But it was that look, like, I'm going to come over there, and your mother is going to be very, very sad when you end up
but you can
in
still,
a parachute.
You know what? You can still mess a kid up, like, if you just turn around before the parent can do anything, if you're yeah. just like, I will eat your dreams. Like, the kid can't, at that point, there's nothing the parent can do to erase that from the child.
Scar.
Yeah.
Scar for life. We'll never actually ride an airplane again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You solved the problem for future
I'm
generations.
I'm just doing everyone a favor.
Yeah.
So they don't, the kids
That's
don't.
That's really all we're trying to do here by terrifying your children.
There is a lot of child hatred on this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Because they run around like olive baboons, which are on display right here in African
yes.
Hall. But let's talk a little bit about, I want to talk about how, you know, how you got started, what your environment was when you were growing up, how you, you know, obviously, all the sort of nerdy things you're into, I'm guessing, or have been a lifelong pursuit.
Yes.
So, I'm a little bit older than you. It was not awesome when I was growing up in the 80s to be into nerdy stuff. It was not at all. But I think you probably grew up more in the 90s, right?
Well, I was born in the early 80s.
Right. Oh, so, my
I'm
heart.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, and you're a grown person.
So I would like weird. To think it's my formative years
right.
really in the 80s anyway. But yeah, like I mentioned, my mom, I had a ColecoVision. I had an NES. I had, like, you know, every progressive gaming console and system mm-hmm. up until that time. I think the only console I skipped was the Sega Genesis. And that was because, don't get upset, that was because my best friend down the street had one. So I just went over there and played it.
I love Sega Genesis.
Yeah. That was
Sega Genesis Golf was a game that I played so
yeah.
Endlessly. Mm-hmm. And it really, when you look back at it now, you're like, really?
But I have very fond memories of being a kid, and like my best friend across the street, her dad had a computer, and my parents didn't have a computer until a little bit later. My dad did engineering stuff, so he had a laptop later. But they had Leisure Suit Larry.
Yes! Oh my God!
On their computer.
Leisure Suit Larry!
And I was like, I had no idea what it was. All I knew was that I had to get the encyclopedia to answer these questions about, like, history and shit that I didn't know so I could get into the game. And that was, like, half of the fun was trying to answer the questions to get into the game. Like the childproof questions.
Yes.
And so, yeah,
just
we
like
did
some
that.
Sort of a bridge troll to a sex kingdom.
Right. Pay the toll. And so that was really fun. And then, yeah, we did CompuServe and Prodigy and then eventually went the AOL route.
Yeah.
And I was really addicted to chat rooms. And do you remember Microsoft Comic Chat?
Yeah.
Anyone? That was the coolest freaking thing I'd ever seen in my life.
All that stuff I think is so interesting because, and maybe I've talked about them on this on the podcast before, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but the early days of consumer internet.
Yeah.
AOL, very, very walled garden, and then after a couple of years, AOL started to fall off because people were like, oh no, there's a whole different web experience that you can have when you're not surfing AOL.
I actually remember the exact moment I figured that out. I was watching TV, and I was watching Discovery Channel, and they had an ad for Discovery.com, or for more about this program, go to Discovery.com. This had to have been, like, I feel like early 90s at the very...
Oh, the 1900s.
Oh, back in the day. And so I remembered the URL, discovery.com, and I was like, how do I get to that? How do I get to that through these portals that I'm using? I didn't even think of them as portals at the time. They were
right.
just the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And or they were just Prodigy or AOL. And someone's probably going to correct me about the dates here. I know there's someone already on Twitter being like...
Yeah, they do that.
They wouldn't have a discovery.com in 1991.
Yeah.
But I know that was when I figured out there was more out there.
Yeah. And so we drifted from AOL and we realized, oh, there's this wild kingdom of web... This webverse is out there and we can access it all with Alta Vista and WebCrawler and all these... and then... But now it feels like... people are want to drift back into the walled garden.
Facebook or app-based
culture. Mm-hmm. And it's like we drifted out a little bit, and we're like, the water's too deep. I want to go back.
I'm scared and alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are my friends and family?
What do you think? Oh, that guy had it. Web crawler, this is bullshit. I fucking told you, if anyone brings that shit up again today, like 3 times a day, people won't shut up about web crawler. So sick of hearing about it. Dumb little spider on the search bar. Fuck that guy.
Hate it.
So what do you think? Do you think it's just that, you know, as everyone becomes kind of a child, like an internet citizen or web citizen, that mm-hmm. People just want shit just handed to them?
I don't know if it's an easy kind of thing that they're looking for. I think it's more of a reconnection kind of thing. They're like, okay, now my family and all my friends are actually figuring out how to use this stuff.
Yeah.
Now I actually have the ability to share this crap I'm finding, these cat videos and these, you know, these whatnots, and I can show it to my uncle who lives in Kentucky or whatever.
You used to have to fly to someone's house and put in a VHS tape of cat videos.
The good old days.
The good old days. You actually had to make a zoetrope of a cat with a yarn, and you had to hand deliver it. Cat zoetrope.
This is a whole new industry you're coming up right now. Well, there are old-timey lolcats. That's the thing.
What?
That's like a separate branch of the meme.
Yeah. Oh my god! Like people are finding old-timey lolcats, or they're making ones that look old-timey.
They're finding old pictures of cats, and either like re-lolling them.
Right.
I don't know what the correct terminology is there, but they're somehow bringing like the old timiness back into the meme. It's like retro lolcats.
Oh, that's
awesome. Yeah, or they find like early videos of cats and, you know, do voiceover for them.
Like steampunk lolcats.
Basically, we're running out of shit to do. Yes.
Boy, that cat is having a tough time with all that brass. He cannot stand up on that at all.
No. The goggles, they don't fit.
Yeah, no, the claws.
The goggles are not comfortable.
That cat can't even move in that leather coat. He's just dragging.
And don't even try to get him on the dirigible. No. You try mixing cats with dirigibles, it's all over.
That little cat's building a Wayback machine so he can... But
we digress.
Oh, this show is all about digression. When did you start... I know you went to Emerson.
I did, yeah.
What did you study there?
Audio radio with a focus in new media.
Really?
Yes.
So when was... What year was that?
I started in 2000.
Okay.
Yeah, so I graduated 2004.
Great.
And unfortunately, audio radio and new media were in the same like school. Like same family.
Couldn't be more different.
So I couldn't like minor in new media studies. I had to just kind of take all those classes on my own accord. But yeah, I wanted to go into sound production and studio recording, and then I just liked new media stuff. So I was taking like HTML and Java stuff and just kind of getting my hands dirty with that kind of that world, because I was really into computers and really into computer games. Mm-hmm. And thank God World of Warcraft wasn't out at that time, because it would have been all over for me right away.
Well, it was. It just wasn't online.
Yeah. Like,
it
was I was like Warcraft 2 or yeah, 3 and stuff. Yeah. But I was in. I was playing Black and White 2 at that time. Do you guys remember that game? Dude.
All right. Three
I'm
people.
Waiting for the reboot on that one. Like, whoa. Like, if it hasn't been announced, it's not real. I'm making that up. I would love for it to happen.
I'm waiting for a Zork reboot. Like, I always loved the Zork games. I loved all the text-based Zork games. Uh-huh. Like, When I was in grade school, in the chess club, was also the computer lab, and we had all these. This should date me a little bit. They were Apple IIe's. That was an old kind of computer, Veronica Belmont. Oh, the screen with letters would light up lime green. we ate dirt, and we had cats with leather coats when goggles would laugh at us. But there were these text-based Zork games. And in the late 90s, the Zork kind of had a reboot, and they did this game called Zork the Grand Inquisitor, which is one of my favorite games of all time. Mm-hmm. But they just haven't rebooted the Zork franchise since.
I used to run a BBS when my parents would go to sleep at night, because they had to take up the phone line.
And so we were, did you connect to 2400 baud?
24? 14-4? Come on. No, but... It was fun. That was my little way of interacting with the world, because you could actually get in rooms and play like muds and stuff with people, and that was fun.
It was good. You know, it was an interesting time of discovery, and now I feel like goddamn kids today. They just, everything's handed to them. Everything's handed to them online. But you've been doing podcasts. I mean, I feel like kind of an asshole because I started my podcast in 2010, and you've been doing podcasts since 2005, since people were really saying, "What's a podcast?"
Yeah, well, that was kind of how it was funny how what I went to school for kind of turned into the perfect, like perfect case scenario for what I ended up doing, mm-hmm. because I went to Emerson, I graduated, I moved out to San Francisco, I didn't have a job or anything, so I was doing temp stuff, and then I saw a job listing on Craigslist for a audio production intern for CNET, and I was like, this is perfect, this is like, oh my gosh, I have to get this job, and so I basically threw myself at them, and I was like, I'll do whatever you want, like, you know, I'll work for free, I don't care, just let me come in, and they actually hired me as an intern. And originally, I was just posting like webcast stuff, so like, you know, white papers and kind of boring businessy style stuff and webcasts online. And then my boss at the time was producing a brand new show over there called Buzz Out Loud, mm-hmm. which was their first big podcast test mm-hmm. that they were doing. And the host was Tom Merritt and Molly Wood. And he eventually left to go work at Oracle. And he was like, "Well, I'm leaving. We need someone to produce this show. Do you want to take it on?" And I was like, "Heck yeah!" And so I
saw you've started to make the F.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it okay to swear on the show?
I have been swearing like I'm not in a museum.
All right. I never know because I'm on so many like family-friendly shows or like PG-style shows, and then
we have an explicit tag on our show, so
okay.
You can.
So I mean, like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to. You don't have to swear it up. But this event is 21 and over, and,
right. Okay.
And yeah, exactly.
But anyway, yeah, so I started producing the show, and then I started talking on the show. And the talking led to being the third co-host, and hosting that show led me to start other podcasts there. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, I was hosting four shows and with other people as well, and producing eight.
Oh my God, what was the podcast landscape like in 2005, just in terms of, you know, what were your audience sizes and, you know, like how...
Well, just as a comparison, I mean, I think when I first started really, when we first really started doing Buzz Out Loud, it was like 10,000 an episode, mm-hmm. and it was daily. And so that's pretty low, but we definitely grew the numbers year for year. I think when I left, they were getting way over 100,000 per episode.
Wow.
And hopefully they're not going to like sue me for saying that or something. But
I don't know why. You know, it's funny. People are so weird about their numbers.
They're very guarded about numbers.
I don't know why
yeah.
anyone gives a shit. Like, you know,
yeah. But that was 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And so they're still doing that show. They've mm-hmm. had like over 1,500 episodes at this point
Jeez.
Now, I think. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got my start in podcasting. But there were already people doing it. I mean, I was listening to the MacCast and Geek News Central and, you know, all the stuff Adam Curry was doing at the time.
The Podfather.
The Podfather, yeah. And
that's what he calls himself. Do you guys know that?
Really, it's what he calls himself.
Adam Curry, who I didn't realize years and years ago I saw a special on the MTV VJs. What are they doing now? And... You know, and then they went and interviewed Adam Curry's hair, and and there it was behind a desk, and a voice was coming out of it, and the voice said, "Oh, I'm doing this thing called, you know, I'm helping to build these podcasting." But this, but I feel like this might have been in like 2002 or 3.
Mm-hmm. It was around. I mean, it was definitely happening.
Yeah.
I didn't really get into it until I left college. I didn't really know about it until I think I got. Yeah, until the first year I lived out in San Francisco. And then all of a sudden, I just kind of threw myself into it. I mean, I even remember we were complaining that iTunes wasn't recognizing podcasts as a separate thing. We're like, well, we have RSS. You can just pull it in as an aggregator. And then when they launched the podcasting section, then everyone started freaking out all over again because they're like, well, now they're going to have the monopoly on podcast distribution and no one's going to use anything else. And while there are still other aggregators out there, it really has pretty much been... You know, iTunes.
Yeah, I think
Zoom,
iTunes.
To an extent,
I think iTunes
and a few
is responsible for about 78% of our of our podcast downloads.
Yeah, so it's been the landscape has definitely changed, and people are still asking that question of, is this a legitimate business? Is this a legitimate form of entertainment at this point?
I fucking hope it is, because I've been putting a lot of energy into it.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you call it, you know, web TV, web series, like online radio shows, like talk news, like it's
I
all
wish there was
different
a better name
flavors
than podcasts.
Of the same thing. You know what?
I
don't mind.
I like it.
I just feel like
okay
when I ask someone, I'm like, you want to get into my podcast? Like, I wish, I don't know, like Turbo Radio. I don't know. I wish there was something that had more balls to it than podcasts. But that is the thing. I don't know. We talked a little bit about this before where, you know, it's like I don't know if it's if launching a bunch of podcasts is really a sustainable business model, but it's fun and it's interesting
fun
to put stuff out there. And I think it feels like that's kind of the best reason to do anything. It's sort of I think it's like the nerd mantra of like, do this because it's fun and this it should be in the world.
I think all the best podcasts are really the most niche shows.
Yep.
Like really the stuff where the hosts and the audience are obsessed with whatever they're talking about. You know, we found that with the show I do for fun, Sword and Laser, is just all sci-fi fantasy nerds.
Yep.
And that's all we talk about. And we have interviews. We're having Hodor on the podcast this week from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Hopefully he will say more than just Hodor the entire time. and we do it for fun because we love it. And that I think is what makes really great content, is when people are having fun and love what they're talking about and share that passion with their listeners. And that's what makes it awesome.
I've been listening to Leather Pussy, which is a steampunk lolcat podcast.
Yeah.
I totally made that up.
You are definitely going to need a more like badass name for podcasting if you launch that one.
But I love, and then you sort of...
Ear Assault. No, that's not good.
I like it. We should do
terrible.
It.
That's terrible.
But we should just do it. We should just do one episode of it and just make people think it's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just literally steampunk woke. Oh, fuck, those lizards are alive. I didn't realize they were alive. Oh, my God. They trick you. Half the stuff in here is deceased. And then all of a sudden, African reptiles.
Yeah.
I got tricked by the penguins, too.
Oh!
They're alive. Those are live penguins. Or incredibly awesome robots. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't... That freaked me out just
best
to see...
Best robots ever.
Just a large thing. Oh.
He's watching you.
Did you guys see Night at the Museum where all the animals come to life at night?
It's happening right now.
This room must be off the hook, man.
But did it ever occur to you to do anything else, or I feel like you sort of came up at a time where it was very feasible to pursue kind of nerdy interests as a career, and it was very difficult to do that before.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go into music. I wanted to go into sound recording, and I wanted to do field production. Or I knew I wanted to do something in an entertainment. You know, but I never really considered being like an on mic type of person where I actually was the one doing the talking.
What about on camera? When did you start to make that jump?
That was maybe 2 years into my time at CNET, where I was hosting the shows, but I wasn't doing any on camera stuff. It was all audio podcasts.
Yeah.
My boss at the time, Mark, was like, "Hey, you know, you know what you're talking about. Do you want to write a script and try doing something on camera?" And I was like, "Okay." I was kind of nervous. I was like, "Oh, I guess." And I think the first video I did was called "Give Your PC a Mac Over."
That's adorable.
And I'm literally sitting there at a desk, like I don't know how to stand, I don't know how to sit, so I'm like hunched over, like this is how you do with the thing. And we had a teleprompter, and I didn't know how to use it, so I was just kind of like I had to stop every like three sentences because I'd be like, oops, sorry. I was like, I don't know what to say next.
This is a turn to camera. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that.
But it was fun. I got into it, and for a long time I had to actually edit my own videos, so that was a learning process too.
But you still do this because. In the green room, I was talking to you and Ryan and your boyfriend Ryan Block, who's also here as well somewhere. I think he's here, right? Ryan Block?
Damn.
There's Ryan Block in the middle! Ryan Block of GDGT. And so you and I were sort of talking about like control freakism, and I said, I only just like a month ago stopped editing, putting together all the podcasts myself, and you said, "Oh yeah, I don't."
I don't edit Texilla, which is the video show, because we have hired people that do that at Revision 3. But I do edit Sword and Laser every week, and it's fun for me because I get to, you know, I still love doing that kind of work, and it's fun, and I get to edit all my fuck ups out of the show. So that's also a
benefit. But that one's really hard because you say you do that one, you're not in the same room.
No, yeah. We have like these epically long pauses sometimes, like when we forget like who's supposed to talk next or who's going to introduce the next segment. So we'll just, it almost goes on so painfully long, I think he's disconnected. And I host it with my friend Tom Merritt, who I used to do Buzz Out Loud with as well. And so I just edit those out. It's not that big of a deal, but we have like little intro segment clips for our different parts of the show, and you know, we edit in interviews as well. So
do you like sort of
it's not
being
that hard?
No, well, but it is time consuming, especially if you want to be creating stuff, to have to do kind of all the menial like clerical stuff. But what's your goal? Do you want to be like a tech correspondent for, you know, CNN or CBS, or do you like just sort of building your own little universe of things that you can, that you have more control over?
You know, it can go either way at this point. I would love to do something, you know, TV would be fun and great, but it's never been my ultimate goal. I just want to do something that I really care about and love and that I'm really passionate about, and if that means I have to do it myself and make my own stuff, then that's what I'll do. But if I can find cool, awesome people to work with who are similar, you know, like-minded, like-minded, then that's also a huge benefit.
It's funny, there's, you know, when people say, like, how do I start a thing? Like, there's literally no excuse for anyone who wants to make a thing anymore. Like, software's cheap, computers are cheap.
If you already have a computer, I mean, there's really great vocal mics that you can buy. Like, even just getting an SM57 or something to record on, or a 58. I forget which is the vocal mic and which is the
58, 59, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
That's a Mr. Mom joke.
I
think that movie came out the year you were born. Oh, my fucking heart. Oh, that hurts.
But it's so easy to do now. You know, the sword and laser process at this point is we record the show on Skype. I maybe paid $15 for Audio Hijack Pro to get all the audio in. I use a free program called Levelator to totally normalize all the audio.
Yep.
I use Audacity, which is an open source audio editor.
Yeah, I know you sneered at me a little bit, and I was like, I had it on GarageBand. You're like, really? Like, what did I do? Why are you judging me? I know.
Just do all the ID3 tags in iTunes, upload it using Spin Express, which is an extension of archive.org, and then they host all your stuff for free. I mean, it might not work as well if you're getting like a million downloads. It might slow it down a bit, but for the numbers we're doing right now and the audience we have, it's fine. And then, just upload the feed to iTunes and you got a podcast.
I always put you in the same kind of bin with like... there's a bin of people that I feel like are really early adopters who like really... Like, just the fact that your Twitter handle is Veronica. that's like having a two-digit license plate, really.
Yeah.
That guy's had a car since there was a car started. What was it that originally drew you to Twitter, and how did you find out about it?
I found out about it because I had kind of heard through the grapevine a little bit about the service, but I had kind of been ignoring it a little bit. And then one night at CNET, we had a new tech event, SF New Tech event, where a lot of different startups come and show off their latest product. And Biz Stone was actually there showing off Twitter. And as he was going through the demonstration, my friend Niall was there, and I think Ryan was there too. And as he was going through the demonstration, do you know Om Malik? He's a blogger for GigaOm, or the owner of GigaOm and his many other sites that he does. He's great. I saw that he had his name up there as one of the people that was using Twitter. And I was like, oh, if Om's doing it, I got to try it out now. This is serious business. This is going to be something. And so I signed up, and I think that was October of 2006. And I just tried to get Veronica, and I got it. And I pretty much think that my first 5 posts were about sandwiches. and then it just kind of went from there, yeah.
But social networking, I think for all of us, has been really the thing that's helped sort of hold everything together and sort of get... I mean, now I can't even imagine having a podcast or website or anything else without having, you know, a microblogging service or just like something to get it out to large numbers of people.
It's so weird how your uses for different social networks change over time. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, I've been using Twitter for so long, but now I'm using Google+. So now everything I think is really cool, I post on Google+.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm neglecting Twitter. I should go back to Twitter.
So you have a tiered hierarchy of social networks that you go, oh, sandwich goes back to Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah, so all my food-related content is going back on Twitter and everything else. Yeah.
I am on Google+, but I've been so busy that I haven't really gotten into the, like, I want to try the Hangouts thing, and I formed a couple circles, and I have people that have me in their circles. But what's your favorite part about it?
Well, I did a really fun Hangout with a few other people in the tech industry, like Gary Whitta and Will Smith from Tested, and a few other people from over there. And basically the whole thing we did the entire time was show off our pets. So, like, we were like, oh, look, here's Mr. Little Jeans. He came to say hello. And then Gary got his dog to come over, and we were, like, holding... We had all of our cats held up to the screen at the same time. We took a picture. It's actually on my blog right now. I think it's the top post. And I'm like, this is what cats make progression in the internet world. You bring the cats, everyone else will come.
I wanted to show you my Roan's antelope, which I... That'd be awesome if everyone was like... Oh, here's my cat, here's my fucking dog. And you're like, oh, Roan's antelope, motherfucker.
Bitches.
Yeah, I have a Jackson's chameleon.
I like how you're just picking names from things.
Yeah. That's
like,
really
I don't actually know
thing.
Any animals.
That's
so
the
just...
laziest. Oh, a lol cheetah right there. Look at that, adorbs. I got to put you in a circle on the Google Plus.
You don't have me in a circle yet?
I'm so sorry. I know.
Is that like a super faux pas to admit to someone that you haven't encircled them?
Yeah, it is. It used to be I'm not following you yet. And we're like, oh, fuck. But now it's like, we're not in a circle.
Oh, you know what the worst thing is?
What?
When you really like someone or like really want to like chat with them or something.
And they have the worst tweets?
No. And you go to like send them a direct message or something about something and you're like, they're not following
yes!
you.
Yes! Yes.
It's just like the big, like, oh.
I've had that too, and you.
Then you question everything you've done in the past like 6 months.
And what's funny about that is I have a fuck ton of followers, but you have more than I do. And just the fact that we would still be like, oh,
I'm
that
sad.
One person's not following
me.
Could there be anyone with worse problems than me? I don't think so.
No, it's so true.
But that's but that was one of the things that led me that made me really love Twitter right off the bat was that I noticed that. All the nerds had the most followers. And it wasn't really until, like, Ashton Kutcher jumped on Twitter and Britney Spears and, you know, like, Oprah, that they all, like, but, like, all, you know, all the nerds, you know, you and Ryan and Will Wheaton and the, yay! And, oh, we were, okay, okay. Just from an older podcast, Next Generation. If you, we talked about this a bit. If you eat something in the holodeck, does it vanish? If you eat something in the holodeck, there's a couple different theories on this. Matthew Myra believes that the atoms just dissipate, they go away when you leave the holodeck. Other people say, no, it's a food replicator. So
it depends, I guess. Do we know if they're using actual replicator technology inside of the holodecks, or are they using, or is it food that is, do we know this?
They are using...
So it will not dissipate from your stomach after you eat it, it'll stay.
So you can get fat on the holodeck.
Oh, that's the name of your show.
You can get fat on the holodeck?
Yeah, that's...
Can you... But okay. What if you designed in the holodeck a machine that would replicate food that would dissipate into atoms once it got into your system?
Why would you want to do that?
What?
That's the old, like... Can you replicate, like, a million replicators? And
yes!
A replicator.
Yes! You know, like, if a genie gives you a wish, always wish for a million wishes.
Yeah. I've started reading that genies have caveats about that now.
They do?
They won't do that, yeah.
Oh, well, in the old days, it was so easy to trick those smoky fuckers.
Yeah, no. It's all over now. But, yeah, the holodeck is so fascinating with that. The replicator is my number one future tech thing that I want to exist.
Yeah.
In my lifetime.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Shut up.
I'm sorry. Although, yeah, I don't know. Although,
you don't know science.
I know science. I'm intelligent. But I was reading on VentureBeat that IBM built this thing called Synapse. They're designing this thing, which basically it will be the closest thing to AI that I think that we have.
The closest thing to AI.
I think so, yeah.
What does that have to do with my replicator?
Well, because if they can do that, then they should be able to build a food replicator. But what would be involved? What would you need for a food replicator? Do we have existing technology right now that you could sort of piecemeal together?
So,
I mean, we're at the Academy of Sciences. I'm the first person to ask this question in these walls.
All right, so a replicator works by just taking atoms, and they basically has the blueprints of all the things. That's not the only thing I had, like
MakerBot. Figure out.
Yeah, like MakerBot. Exactly. So is MakerBot really just a prototype replicator?
I think it is. I mean, that's really what it is. You're uploading...
Have you asked Brie about that?
The what?
Brie.
I actually have talked to Brie about it, and MakerBots are really awesome. They're basically these consumer... they're not super expensive. They're for like, you know, low end consumer 3D printers, and so you get this synthetic material, and then it prints out, you know, layer by layer until you have your thing.
Yeah.
And there's a whole site where people have uploaded basically the software blueprints for different items that you can print out.
So we could just crowdsource the replicator recipes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
If you could make that synthetic material edible, then there's no reason that you couldn't add like a fucking flavor tube and throw some, you know, beef and onion on there.
But everything looks so, it looks so real and appetizing. Like, that's the next level. I think we can make, like, shit food, but, like, like flavor shit food.
Yeah.
But how do we get it to, like, you know, beef bourguignon?
I don't know. I long for the day where it's like the Bobby Flay food replicator, and it's like as soon as it gets to that level of consumerism, then
that
I feel
awesome.
Like I feel like that's where
I feel like nothing cool enough is happening in my lifetime. Like what, there's a lot of cool stuff.
Got
but
the fucking internet. What are you talking about?
But I want all my Star Trek technology.
You got the thing that literally changed the way that humans exist in your lifetime.
But I mean,
it's so funny how spoiled we are as consumers. They're like, my iPhone's great, but 5-megapixel camera, whatever.
It's last year's model.
It's so funny how instantly we become spoiled.
You're really making me sound like a brat on this show.
No, no, not at all.
I just want my Star Trek technology. Is that so much to ask?
No, but I really feel like there must be a consortium of nerds somewhere who is actively working to make that happen. Must be. There must be in this world.
I know scientists are pretty nerdy. They must have, you know, I'm sure enough of them have that kind of like sci-fi will to kind of look into that stuff.
Yeah.
But I just want to see something close to it.
It's like their alternative fuel source by day, food replicator by night.
That's
that's what they come home and neglect their life with.
I was all about transporters until I realized the whole, well, you die and then you're not dead anymore thing.
Right. Wait, what?
That's...
Oh, you mean you die when your molecules are disassembled?
Yeah.
And you're, yeah.
Like that whole thing just kind of turned me off to it.
You don't like being reassembled.
I don't want to worry about that. I'm too high strung.
But you wouldn't. I mean, it would happen in an instant. You wouldn't realize. Just be like, I'm in another place. Like that's how fast it would be.
Or I'm another face with my arm sticking out of my forehead.
That would be awesome. Yay!
It's like I always dreamed.
So what, you know, where do you see the, because it's funny, I didn't meet, are you waving goodbye?
Bye.
You what?
Margin call in Hong Kong.
Are you serious? Oh, no. All right. Get out of here. Don't come back.
You crazy kids.
Bye. See you later.
They
probably got really turned on with the holodeck. They're like, we better get home and take care of this business. They're not still listening.
I said something about a marching band.
No, he said margin call in Hong Kong. Like he was.
Oh, like business.
No. That's a euphemism for sex. Like, oh.
Oh.
Margin call in Hong Kong.
All right. Yeah.
Here comes China.
Really, China was the sexiest one you could...
That was his, not mine. He said margin call in Hong Kong. Right. That's probably...
Fair enough.
Where do you see... I mean, one of the reasons why I didn't immediately hop on the Facebook train was because I had been, you know, I had been burned by, like, Friendster and MySpace and
the great
My Tribe.
Friendster Exodus of 2002.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yes.
Where I was like, you can put songs on MySpace!
Oh.
Just songs and Dane Cook. Like, that was pretty much MySpace. And then MySpace turned into an Ed Hardy store, and everyone left it.
No, MySpace turned into, like, the GeoCities of social networks.
Yes, yes.
And, like, blink tags and, like...
MySpace... You know. I feel like MySpace turned into... If there had been, like, some weird apocalypse in downtown Tokyo, but then there were no people, but everything was still flashing, and you're just walking around going... What civilization was this? Underwear in a vending machine.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I was like, Facebook, that'll never catch up. Like, what do you think it was about Facebook specifically that really crawled under the skin of just like average web consumers.
I think it was that initial feeling that you were belonging to a small, exclusive group. Mm-hmm. You know, you were like, oh, I'm friends with all my college friends, or I'm friends with the people at my office, and we have our own little network, and it felt kind of insulated from the outside internet, and I think that made people feel a little more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then it was just so stupidly easy that you could be like, Mom, just get on Facebook. She's like, okay.
Yeah, it's really stupidly easy for me to expose all my personal information.
That's the hard part, keeping them from doing that.
I probably should care more about that stuff, but I just feel like I am so tethered to the web at this point.
It was really cute, actually, the other day. I did a Texilla Daily Tip or something, and my email address showed up in it. And I got like 4 or 5 emails like that day being like, hey, I just wanted to let you know your email address is in the video. And I was like, thank you, but that's totally public information at this point. Like, it was fine. It was actually the address I used for my Google Plus, so I wanted to get out there so people can find me if they're looking for me on there. But yeah, it's weird how we're such a culture of like paranoia at this point. Like, it's good and it's bad because people kind of have their tinfoil hats on. They want to protect themselves from the evils of the internet. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, they're like freely exposing all their personal information and credit cards without checking to see if it's a secure website or checking to see who's actually getting this information. So it's weird. It's like a give and take. You know, people are scared about the wrong things sometimes, and they need to be paying more attention to what they're actively putting out there rather than what they think people are trying to actively steal from them.
So what was the tip?
Oh, I was showing how to make the Google Plus bar show up on all your other web pages. It was like an extension.
Uh-huh.
And so it just shows the black bar on top of...
Like a Firefox extension
Chrome.
Or a Chrome extension?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
so
yeah, whatever.
It shows the bar on top of everything.
Of course. They're giving out Chromebooks. I don't want this to sound like an advertisement, but...
At Virgin America?
On Virgin America. Yeah. There's like these Chromebook stations, mm-hmm. and you can just get a Chromebook, and they'll give it to you, and then you can
Yeah, and then they're going to give them the children. What's going to happen then?
Oh my God. People should swap their kids for Chromebooks. So amazing.
I'm like, no, they'll be here when you get back. Don't worry. They'll be fine.
Chromebooks are so much more useful.
No. But like the fear thing really drives me crazy too, because it's really preventing, I think, our country from moving forward in a lot of really cool ways that other countries have already started doing. And yeah, there's worthwhile reasons to be concerned about a lot of the security stuff, like RFID, for example.
Right.
Like Japan has been using like near field communication stuff for ages, for mm-hmm. buying stuff, for going on the subways, for doing everything.
I can't wait till we get that shit. I thought it was going to be in the next iteration of the iPhone, but
well,
I think not.
It's starting to happen, but people are so freaked out that their information is going to get swiped from them just by walking by someone that the uproar has caused it to kind of not happen.
Right.
And it's stuff like that that's preventing us from really jumping forward into the next technology age, in my opinion.
Have you ever been to a DEF CON?
No, I haven't.
I went to DEF CON. DEF CON is a hacker convention, I went to it in Vegas a couple years ago. And it is fascinating, and they... You know, like they'll have this, they have a wall of sheep, which is basically all the people that are accessing, using the public network.
Right.
And it exposes, I mean, it blacks out their personal information, but it just shows them
it's
how.
It's like pro tip. If it says free public Wi-Fi,
don't ever get on it.
Use it.
Ever get on it. Yeah. And then, you know, they have this really cool thing called Lockpick Village, which is a physical, like they're physical locks, like locks and keys. And it's people picking all these sorts of locks, and it's just sort of the parallel of being, mm-hmm. you know, nothing, not to freak anyone out, nothing is perfectly safe.
Right.
Like it really is just how much time someone can noodle with something before they'll actually get into it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a big thing at DEF CON about the that 9-year-old girl who found all those security kind of holes in, well, not really security holes. She found some holes in like cell phone like game software mm-hmm. that could, you know, you could give yourself more money or more resources just by turning the clock back in a certain way. And it's stuff like that that makes me really happy, because not only is this a kid who's like really getting into computers and getting into hacking and getting into learning the ins and outs of everything, of all the devices and tech she's using, but she's a 9-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, not only do more girls need to get into science, technology, math, this whole area, but it's so cool that she's so young and she's already so much more advanced than anyone was at that age that I knew, you know?
It used to be the bit, you know, it's funny, like, did anyone watch The Jetsons? All right, so the big silly jokes on that show were that George Jetson pushed buttons all day at work and his kid Elroy is taking calculus. And like, that's kind of happening. It's sort of... I still want my sassy robot maid, but I don't have that yet.
Rosie, right?
Rosie, yeah.
Rosie, yeah, she was awesome.
Rosie the Riveter. That was really before they understood anything about like microprocessing, so everything was just really big. Like really, really, all their machines were really big.
Well, how will the robot like bring you a beer if it's, I guess you could do a tiny rolling, just get the, a Roomba, the, just
no,
get a
no,
Roomba,
no, no.
Just train your Roomba, you'll be good.
No, no, the,
you can do that.
You totally could.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to, I wanted to put a camera on the top of a Roomba and then just have it chase my dog around the house.
No, the new thing is to actually put cameras on dogs and cats and then set them free.
Just like out into
like
the
a
wild?
Like a live streaming cam of your cat's activities. Well, I'm really sorry this keeps coming back to cats. I mean, there's a few things in life that I really harp on.
Are cats one of them?
Cats are one of them.
Do you like cats or you don't like cats?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Oh, yeah, you do like cats because I saw... Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you do like cats.
I got two.
What kind of... What are their names?
What are their names?
Yeah.
Mr. Little Jeans. and Devo. Devo's the girl cat.
The De-Evolution Band?
Yeah.
And where did Mr. Little Jeans come from?
He came... They both came from the pound. They're both rescues.
No. The name, Mr. Little Jeans.
Ryan named Mr. Little Jeans, actually, but he's a character from Bottle Rocket, I believe.
Oh, right.
From the Wes Anderson movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
There's actually, like, a musician now named Mr. Little Jeans, and so Mr. Little Jeans gets all these replies to his Twitter account.
Oh, that's really awesome.
No, it's not awesome. My cat has a Twitter account.
Oh, no.
That was the thing I was ashamed of.
No, listen, in the early days of MySpace, I made a profile for a yam. And it was just called Yam, and all these Vietnamese people joined. I swear to God, I'm not making that up. And I'm like, guys, there's a picture of a yam in the profile. What are you not getting?
Yeah.
And it would say stuff like, God damn it, I'm not a sweet potato. You know, like it was.
No, I do a very similar thing where people say, excited to see Mr. Little Jeans on tour tonight in Atlanta. And I write back through Mr. Little Jeans. I say, I'm not there. I'm a cat.
Well, we didn't talk about, just really quickly, Google Plus. Like, what's the big selling point for you? For like, why is it so addictive to you?
The comments. I just like being able to have all the responses in one place, and the ongoing conversation is really valuable to me. Like, getting not only instant feedback on what I'm posting, but also like now people can talk to each other about the stuff, which it can happen on Twitter sometimes. But since most people have it, so you can only see the replies of people if you're both following both of them.
Right.
Now it's a much more open conversation. And I just think the resharing stuff is really cool. The Hangouts are okay. I've tried them a couple times. I want to explore more of that in terms of like live podcasting type stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like posting videos and animated GIFs.
And what do you think? What do you think is going to be the thing about Google Plus that sort of puts it ahead of Facebook?
I don't know. We're already getting famous people, like real actual famous people. Like I followed William Shatner tonight.
Oh.
And it's really him, and he's awesome, and he signs everything. My best, Bill. Just like on Twitter at the end of every post.
Really?
You didn't notice that?
No.
No, it's awesome.
But I'm not following Shatner on Twitter.
Well.
I know. But I do love following Tom Hanks because he signs HANX at the end of all his.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like Spanx.
Like Spanx, yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Are you annoyed with, because some people get annoyed because I've actually just recently linked Twitter to Google Plus, and I've also have Twitter linked to Facebook. So that it just, like, I can just send out one, I can just...
You're not supposed to be able to do that yet. Did they open the API up for that? Did you find some kind of...
No. They must have, because it's in one of the settings. You go in...
It is?
And it says connect, like, you can connect it to other networks, and I connected it to Twitter.
I don't believe you.
I absolutely did it.
All right, I'm going to check that out.
I absolutely did it.
I'm not happy that that's happening, by the way.
Does that, because I know some people are very social network snobby in the sense, like, if they're on Facebook and they see an at sign, they're like, ah, fuck you, that's for Twitter.
Oh, dude, I got so shit on for doing a follow Friday on Google Plus.
Oh.
I thought they were gonna fucking kill me.
Really?
It was like, I got like 100 comments of people just being like, what is this stupid, I can't believe you're bringing this stupid tradition over to Google Plus. This is supposed to be better than Twitter.
You know how you can kill?
Blah, 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 blah. I was like, shut up.
You just write back with, I can't believe you don't have a job. You know, like, why? Like, that shuts anyone down. Like, oh.
I have noticed a little more, like, nerd rage on Google Plus so far, but I think that'll taper down as it gets more popular.
Google does absorb the early adopters first.
Yeah. I mean, I get the nerd rage all the time, but there's treatment for that.
Does it still bother you?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit?
From time to time.
Who's mean to you, though? Like, you're just nice. Like, I don't understand why people attack nice people.
Am I?
Yes!
I don't really have that much problem with trolls. Like, it's not like a big thing I have to deal with every day. Like, I'm not very polarizing on any of my social networks either, so it's not like I'm giving people a reason to be like, you know, really angry with the position I've taken, because usually I'm just reporting on the news or sharing something funny.
Here's two tips on how to Macify your PC and fuck Canadians. Yeah. What? Come on, Echo.
My few experiments into being polarizing have been interesting.
What was one example?
Oh, geez. I did one recently, and now I'm having trouble. This is not a really big one, but I complained about IE9 getting installed on my PC accidentally when I was installing Age of Empires online. And why is that funny? And I accidentally clicked like the OK, install Internet Explorer 9.
Right.
I was like, fuck! And people were like, well, no, it's really nice. Like, you should really try Internet Explorer 9. I was like, ah, shut up. So I guess they really more ended up polarizing me at the end of that scenario. It's like, stop following me. But yeah, Internet Explorer. It's sweet that they keep going on with that.
I mean, you'd have to be a multi-billion-dollar company to really
No, but in all honesty, I've heard it's a lot better. I haven't spent a lot of time with it, but there are some improvements.
I jump back and forth between Firefox and Chrome.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Yeah.
And I like both for different reasons.
I'm on Chrome 99% of the time, I would say.
It's pretty freaking fast.
Yeah. I like the extensions. I like the themes. I like the stuff you can do with it. It's fun.
So what now? Techzilla's. You're doing Techzilla, and what season? Do you guys even have seasons, or how does that?
We've been doing the show. I've been hosting the show for since April of 2008. Mm-hmm. So coming up on 3.5 years, and they were doing the show for a little bit before that too with Jessica Corbin.
Yeah.
And now it's just me and Patrick, and Robert Herron hosts the Wednesday episode as well. So we've got two episodes a week. We do help and how-to, product reviews, viewer questions, that kind of thing. And then I'm also hosting a show on the PlayStation Network called Core.
Yep.
That's a monthly online video magazine that we talk to developers and learn about the new games coming out on PlayStation. And then Sword and Laser.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You've been talking to a lot of developers. Do any of them know how to plug security holes? What the fuck, you guys? I thought more people knew about that big security leak that happened.
Which one?
Exactly.
I'm not allowed to talk about that.
No, I don't. You weren't talking about that at all. That'll be one that I cut out of the podcast. I'm like, I don't want Veronica to get in trouble, and I brought up the big security leak. So yeah. I'll cut that out. That was.
It happened.
This many minutes in. I'll make Matt Myra do it.
I didn't say anything. You can leave it in.
No. I won't. It's rude. What's next? Like, are you planning any big things? Or are you looking down the road at kind of where you want to take everything?
Got a few irons in the fire.
Are you okay? Did you have a stroke?
I
what happened?
A little thing.
Oh my God! Well, we need medical attention, somebody, please!
Got stung by a bee. I'm looking at some new projects and fun stuff. Sticking with Texil and everything else I'm doing right now, and just trying to find more fun new stuff to do. It's hard to fit everything in already with my schedule, but I love taking on new projects and doing stuff. I definitely want to grow Sword and Laser in a big way, because I feel like that sci-fi fantasy is becoming such a more, I'm happy it's becoming more mainstream with stuff like Game of Thrones and all the other stuff going on right now, because it's like my biggest passion, and I want more people to be into it.
I'm on a bunch of book lists.
Uh-huh.
This is going to sound like a humble brag, and I apologize, but I get a lot of free books. But wait, they are these weird sci-fi romance novels that in the old days would have been had Fabio on the cover, but now it's like his contemporary counterpart, but they're like vampire romance and werewolf romance and witch romance and alien romance.
If you want some real good fantasy romance with a lot of steamy sections, Jacqueline Carey, Kushiel's Dart, and that whole series, excellent.
I don't want any of that.
No,
I
you
don't
should
want
read it.
I don't want it in my life.
Trust me on this one.
For reals?
For reals! It's not like Twilight and shit like that. It's like legit, like really good story with some sexy time.
Oh, no. It's not like, why is this vampire crying again?
No, it's not. No, nothing like that.
Oh, man, I've been watching True Blood this season, and I know. It's my guilty pleasure. Are you watching?
I read all the books, and I just started watching the first season, and I've been watching a few episodes into the new season because my girlfriends are watching it, and I didn't want to be left out. And I feel like I know like the basic storyline of the books, but I know it diverges like pretty strongly from the books.
It was so interesting. The first like four episodes of that show, there was almost no supernatural activity, and it was just more like, oh, it's an allegory for intolerance and blah blah blah. They're in the South, I get it, but I want to see some more vampires. And then all of a sudden, like four or five seasons later, it's like everyone's a thing. Like I
no spoilers.
No spoilers, but I laughed out loud in my hotel room the other night, to the extent I'm surprised no one banged on the wall, when I heard the word Weir Panther. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Really? Now I know, like, in the old...
They're not even just a passing thing, too. They're like a serious character
Which,
element.
I don't know why. That shouldn't bother me, because my old, like, I think it was...
But anything can be aware.
I know. I still have my Monster Manual, my old D&D books, and Fiend Folio and stuff. And there's a bunch of weirs in there. There's like owl bears, and there's all sorts of weird mashup creatures. But just hearing the word out loud for some reason is just like, ugh.
I'm a tiefling warrior.
Are you really?
I am.
You still playing?
Yeah. I stopped about 6 months ago. We had a regular weekly night thing going.
For how long?
For about a year.
You did?
Yeah.
I had one going for a while, and then it stopped. No joke, because our DM got a girlfriend. I'm not fucking kidding.
Wait. Hold on. Google Hangouts for D&D.
Are you serious?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes! Are you doing that?
No, but
oh,
we should.
What are we even still doing here? That is an awesome idea. We have to connect on Google Plus. I'm just Chris Hardwick. And I imagine you're Veronica Belmont.
Yes.
Before we wrap it up and release you to the rest of festivities, any questions from the audience? I see a question back here. Does this microphone work, Daniel?
It does.
Let me race back here. No, sir, don't do any work. I'll come to you. Please, I want you to be as comfortable as possible. Can we get this gentleman an ottoman and some tea bags for his eyes? Come back here. We got a nice avocado facial scrub for you. What's your name?
My name's Blake.
And what's your question?
So it's regarding podcasting as a real business. I'd like to sponsor an episode of the Nerdist Podcast, and I haven't been able to find any information on how to do that.
Son, you've come to the right place. I happen to be well connected in those areas. we should talk about that after the show.
Excellent.
That'd be really nice. Do you have a question for Veronica?
That was it.
Fuck. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Anyone else? Yes, sir. You have a question. What's your name?
Chris.
Chris, what? Why would you leave? It's almost, we have to find out stuff.
It's Adam.
Oh, that's right. Adam's got a show. I'm so, please come back. I'll do anything. Please. Please come back to me. Please. I'll be more present in the relationship. What do you need?
Great. Now they know Adam's going on. Way to go.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Quick.
Since you're both deep in the internet, what would you do if it went out?
Why would you even say such a thing?
Just curious.
I don't
want to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an awful eventuality. Do you have a plan?
Not such.
That's when we have to start making like lolcat zoetropes and then just
we'll just start drawing them.
Okay, good. I don't have an internet catastrophe plan. I just keep hoping, oh, that'll never happen. Why would that ever happen? I feel like we're so... If the web goes down, that means that there's some horrible catastrophe of humanity, and we probably have bigger problems to worry about than not getting onto Google+.
It's making a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. The internet really is like the sixth sense that we have. Good talk. I like your Doctor Who Series 6 t-shirt, though. That's really awesome.
WonderCon.
You got a WonderCon?
Yeah.
I went to WonderCon.
Yeah,
I recognized you. Anyway, thanks for your question. I'm sorry we didn't answer it. Any other quick questions before we wrap up so you guys can go see Adam Savage, who's starting his show pretty soon? Yes.
Any chance Matt and Jonah can make it up here sometime?
Yes, the only reason Matt and Jonah didn't come this time is because, as you know, Matt Myra has quit the Apple Store. Matt Myra's going to be the new gadget producer on Attack of the Show, and tomorrow is his last day at the Apple Store. So he has one more shift at the Apple Store, and they couldn't be here. So sorry to disappoint you, asshole. Sorry, Veronica and I weren't enough for you. What do you want to do? Bleed me dry. What do we have to do? Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
Thank you guys so much for coming.
Yeah, VeronicaBelmont.com, at Veronica on Twitter, Veronica Belmont on Google+, TechZilla, Sword and Laser. This woman is all over the... She is the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me in thanking Veronica Belmont. Also, thanks to SF Sketchfest, Dave Cole and Janet. And we'll see you over at the Adam Savage Show. Thank you so much for joining us in the African Hall. Enjoy your burrito. I said the thing.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by GoToMeeting with high-def group video conferencing. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.